Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. Welcome to Cult Talks Conspiracy.
Before we unseal this file, we wanted to fill you in on some really exciting news.
For as little as $3 a month, you can be a part of our pursuit to hashtag question everything by clicking the support the show link found in the show notes of each episode.
Your support would mean the absolute world to us and help us dive deeper into the mind-blowing conspiracies you, Ty, and I all love.
Thank you for joining us, seeking the truth, and as always, question everything.
You're listening to a Cult Talk Network podcast.
File access granted.
Hello, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. And this is Cult Talks Conspiracy. We're done with summer at sea.
Yeah.
We're back on shore.
Yes, finally.
We just celebrated our 1 year anniversary.
And we did it abroad.
Today is Bailey's birthday.
It is. I'm an old hag. Not really. I don't know. I think aging is absolute. Like, in theory, I think aging is beautiful because, like, it shows your years and it shows your wisdom and experience. But also, like, I started getting gray hair.
Yeah.
And I'm not cool with it. Like, I'm only 27. It's, like, I blame you guys. Like, there is a gray hair spot that is just Cult Talk Net. So, it's the shortest section.
It is the worst. I hate getting old so much. But I luckily, I age pretty good. I don't want to toot my horn.
You're like a fine wine, Ty.
Yeah, most people assume I'm, like, in my 20s still, so.
I know. People think I'm the older one between Ben and I, and then they back it up with, like, oh, you're just so mature, and I'm like, thanks?
Whenever anyone asks me my age, I just, whatever they say, I just let it, that's what age.
Yeah.
Most people always say, like, 27, 28, I'm like, that's what I am.
Like, yeah, that's right. Thank you.
I'll take it. Yep.
Yes.
I always just let that go.
Yep.
But what are we talking about today? What did you want to talk about here on your birthday, Bailey?
One of my favorite things ever. This is probably, like, the grandpapa of conspiracies. We are talking about reptilians today, guys. Ooh. I'm so excited. There is so many beebs and bobs and turns and, you know, roundabouts and whatnot.
The beebs is a reptile?
The beebs is a reptile, actually. Overall, I mean, I shouldn't say he is a reptile. He is, in theory, a reptile along with very many others. But I don't think he is one, to be honest with you. I don't think he is one.
You don't think so?
No, I think his wife is more likely to be a reptile. And she's like feeding off him.
She's Stephen Baldwin's kid.
Is she really?
Yeah, Stephen Baldwin for sure.
Yeah, I think.
She's part of a different group, I think.
See, exactly. There we go. Case in point.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, the reptiles really failed Stephen Baldwin. In this case. He must have gotten the boot.
He was part of the, like, lesser bloodline. That's like cousin Jimmy over there. Like, we don't fuck with him. But I love this conspiracy. I heard this conspiracy. I don't remember an exact time when I heard this one, but I was just always aware of it and just always thought it was freaking awesome and cool. So I was like, what better time to talk about this than on a day where it's all about me and we're going to talk about reptilians.
Absolutely.
So we've got I'm not going to lie to you guys. It's a beefy boy. It's this one we're probably going to revisit a bit too, because like we're going to touch on each different topic here and we'll talk about it more. There's really no corner of the earth that the reptilian theory has not touched. I mean, in culture, religion, finance, people in power, obviously, you know, even down to small communities around different countries. Like, there's no corner that it doesn't touch. So this is definitely something we can do a lot more with. You guys are just going to have to let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a big one. I mean, I know it kind of has legs all over the place. It kind of dips in all kinds of different conspiracies, and it's a pretty elaborate web that the reptilian conspiracy goes through.
Oh yeah, and I mean it's freaking wild, man. It is wild. I have purchased so many books and I am probably on so many lists now, but it's fine because I did it all in the name of research. So.
Yeah, you got to make sacrifices.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's what it is.
It's fine. It's fine.
One of the, it comes with having a conspiracy podcast.
Yep. Nope. Yeah, there's
I'm sure if you look at my history, there's some very questionable websites I've had to go on with these fucking white supremacists that keep coming up everything I do.
Listen, everyone on Cult Talk Net is on some form of government list. Let's make peace with it. We're all on the list somewhere. Even Essie. I bet Essie's on that list before Cult Talk's conspiracy.
They're on to us.
Love you, Essie.
he is foreign, so.
Oh, that's right. He's Canadian. Yeah. He's our little Canadian bacon slice.
What? Yep.
So you never know. He might be on something. Some form of list. I just watched Oppenheimer.
Oh, how was it?
Oh, Oppenheimer was great. Yeah, we're recording this in the past, obviously. Mm-hmm. I just watched Oppenheimer in theaters, and that was, there's some shady stuff in that. So that's a good one. You guys want to check that out.
Nice.
I'm sure people already have. This is, 2 months after?
Oh yeah,
Oppenheimer came out, so hopefully you've seen it by now. It's a fantastic movie.
I can't wait to go see it. As of recording, I have not seen it yet. However,
you gotta see it in IMAX.
Yes.
It was
beautiful.
Filmed for IMAX. And it
was it really?
Shows. Oh yeah. It was filmed with IMAX cameras. Yeah. So it was filmed to be seen in IMAX. So you gotta go see it in IMAX.
Yes. Cute little date night.
Yeah,
love
there you
it.
Go.
Love it. Well. I think I'm definitely ready to unseal this file. What about you, Ty? Are you ready to?
I'm ready to find out all about these evil reptilians. I definitely want to be awakened to what the strings they're pulling.
It's red pill time, baby.
Oh yeah. Oof, that's scary.
So, without any further ado, it is time to unseal file number 026, Reptilian Rule. Okay, so like I said earlier, this is going to go down a whole lot of different turns. We're going to be talking about a little bit of every kind of piece of the world and aspects that go into running the world as well. But first, because me personally, and Ty, I don't know about you, we hear a lot about like the reptilians and who might be a reptilian and how they run the world and everything, but we don't really hear a whole lot about the foundation of where they came from. So. Yep. There is a lovely, lovely, lovely book who goes into the details of the origins of the reptilian. That book is called Alien World Order, and that is by Lynn Kasten. I listened to it on Audible. It's absolutely amazing. We will link it in the description. It will open your eyes. For the reptilian race and home planet, they actually come from a planet called the Green World, and they're
we're actually getting like that's a
we getting the deets.
Okay, cool. I'm really interested in that because I know the first time I heard about reptilians was in like an alien book when I was in elementary school. We had a book. There was some book in the school library that had like. An alien section that showed all the different kinds of aliens. Mm-hmm. And they talk about, grays and humanoids and reptilians. That's the first time I ever heard of reptilians was they're just as an alien race.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested in this.
Awesome. Did it show did it have the chart, kind of an evolutionary chart of going from little reptile all the way to big reptilian?
No, it didn't have that.
Cool.
I remember just talking about reptilians were the most malevolent of all the species. Humanoids are usually pretty peaceful. Grays are kind of the middle ground. They can be, one or the other. But mm-hmm. It was reptiles. Reptilians are always just there's just bad things that come with reptilians.
No, they're not nice people.
I remember that really sticking out to me is reptiles. Reptilians were the most evil of all the alien species that people reported.
They're not nice.
No one has ever reported a good interaction with reptilians.
Ooh, interesting. We're going to talk about that. There's been, especially here recently, there's been a lot where people are just inherently afraid of these, of like the thought or even mere mention of reptilians, which is very interesting. And we're gonna dive a little bit deeper because this does come from their origin and kind of a little bit about their nature as well. So they're from a planet called the Green World, and they actually spawn from a race, or their race is actually called the Keb. And the Green World is actually like solar systems away. Like, it's actually in the Dracos solar system. And their like home world is called Aerodonus. So way, 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 way far out there, like light years out there. So, and the Keb would actually go on to parent a race called the Net. Very, very important, because pretty much you're going to hear different races of reptilians through this, and it's going to be like the Keb human, the Keb themselves, who are the higher beings, the Nek, who are directly under them, and then we have the Nek Kebs, which are like hybrids of the Keb and the Nek.
Okay. Very, very complex.
Very complex.
I'll try to remember that.
I mean, dude, we're going to go through it, but I mean, that's just showing you like how in-depth this history went. And Castor wrote this book from the tellings of Robert Morningsky, who was part Apache and part Hopi. And he actually wrote several books, one of them being the Terra Papers and more. And he got these stories of the reptilians, Morningsky did, from his grandfather, who I believe was Apache. I think he was Apache. If I'm wrong on that, guys, correct me. I'm sorry. But the grandfather got these stories because he and six other of his friends found a UFO crash and found an ET survivor as a part of UFO crash. Now, this is actually way before Roswell as well.
Whoa, okay.
But
this predates Roswell.
This predates Roswell, but the funny thing is it still occurs in New Mexico.
Something with New Mexico.
There's something there. Listen, there is a reason one of the biggest nuclear power plants is in New Mexico. Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Yeah.
So.
Michael Schopenheimer, I know about it.
Yes.
I'm an expert on this.
We are experts.
Yeah.
So they found this ET survivor. The six Apache, it is Apache. Past Bailey put that in her notes. Thank you, Past Bailey. So the six Apache friends, including Morning Sky's grandfather, took the ET and basically like nursed him back to health. And like took care of him, and it's stated, or
it, up guys.
I know, right? Like, that is, you know what? That good for y'all. Good for y'all. Y'all may have declared peace. Like, y'all may have saved us from an invasion. Thank you very much. Like, we're very, very happy. But it was believed that the ET was human-like and had some way of communicating with the six men, whether that be telepathic, whether that be through our own language. It's not really clear. However, it was believed that they were able to communicate between one another, because this ET survivor would, number one, remain in contact with the six Apache throughout their entire lives. And number two, would pretty much tell a complete history of the world that he came from to the six Apache.
Wow.
So, like call that like a freaking, like, thank you. Like, I'm going to tell you about this whole other world that I come from. And just like, why is that not in the history books? Thank you. I mean,
I've never heard of this story. This is very interesting. Heard of this. At all. I've never heard of this encounter.
It's freaking crazy. Insane. This book was a red pill moment, let me tell you. Because I was sitting there listening to it, and I had Ben listening to it with me, and he's like, oh my God, because there's just so much that the reptilians in this book have in similarity to some of the ways that some of the things higher up things are run today. And it's just, I don't want to give too much away, but it's because we're going to talk about a little bit above it, but it's crazy. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah. I think that's the most ominous part of the whole reptilian theory is when you start like reading things and you're able to put the piece together, which that's with all conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, putting the pieces in the right place. But it gets pretty scary with the reptilian stuff. I kind of, you know, will scoff at some people that believe in certain things, but like reptilian stuff, I'm like, it's a slippery slope.
It is. I did find that 20% of Americans believe in reptilians.
That is crazy. Like, but how, not shocking.
Like, how people believe in Jesus, they believe in reptilians. Like, it's wow. Like, and I mean, it's freaking crazy. Reptilian, I don't know.
Jesus.
I don't know. Maybe Jesus is a reptilian.
Could be.
I might get in trouble for that one. We'll see. We'll find out. Let me know if you think Jesus is a reptilian. So, back to Grandpapa and his six amazing friends, or his five amazing friends, because it was six, including Grandpapa. They would go on and communicate with this surviving ET, who they would find his name is actually Bekti. They also called him like the sky philosopher or the sky teacher or something of that nature. I don't remember exactly, but he had many names after that. So Bekti would go on to tell about these creatures and where, you know, his line of origin had originated from. And he would actually go on to say that his lineage came from dragonflies. Dragonflies.
Oh, the bugs.
Like, the bugs.
Oh.
Not where I thought this was going to originate from, but here we are.
Not at all.
So, and then over time, these beings would evolve and morph into a more humanoid form, but keep certain aspects of their either insect or reptilian form. It was just that Bekti's lineage originated from dragonflies, but there also were reptilians as well. Okay. Which I think may be the main difference between the Keb and the Nek, possibly.
Okay. Is that just their origin?
I think. I wasn't really clear on that in the book, but that's my own personal theory. So.
Why not?
I know, why not? Like, it kind of makes sense once this and the other. So, he would note that their physical features were noted as both dangerous and attractive, which is really weird. But they had, like, smooth curves to their body. They had sharp claws. They had this, like, very graceful, almost floating aspect when they walked. And they had, notably, a mouth that was full of sharp teeth that when the mouth closed, it looked like their mouth just completely disappeared. So everything just kind of meshed together. Which is pretty characteristic of that of a reptile, because, you know, like their mouth will close and then like you can just see the line.
Yeah, you see it. Yeah. See, like, the vague line of it.
So Bekti would go on to tell the six Apache that he was from the green world, somewhere in the galaxy, far, far away, which this was his home planet was called Eridanus. So the green world is the planet and Eridanus is somewhere on that planet. So kind of like a country, a part of the planet.
Oh, okay. So, it's just a different part of the...
Yeah. So he's kind of like laying out a map for where his story takes place, which is beautiful. I very much appreciated this detail, Bekti. I'm very happy about it. And he goes on to tell the Six Apache that this would actually take place millions of years prior. And eventually the Keb would become the parent race to the Nek. And the Nek were very much accredited for dressing in their finest garments. And they would really have that aspect of kind of floating as they walked with their enormously grand garments and robes and jewels. And if you're drawing comparisons.
So they were like the affluent, group.
Yes.
Okay. High class.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Showing up to
1%ers.
Yes. Showing up to evening tea like it's the Met Gala. Like,
interesting.
One notable thing about the Nek was they could actually fly, unlike the Keb. So this was actually...
Is that that dragonfly kind of...
Yeah.
Part of... Okay.
Yeah, possibly. I didn't think about that, honestly. That didn't occur to me, that it could be a part of that dragonfly aspect. Interesting.
Makes sense.
It does make sense. But the fact they could fly was vital in their defense system, because they would go on and conquer other worlds in the Draco solar system, which was home of the Green World. So they started nearby first on their conquering spree. So it was said that swarms of the Neck flying over would actually cover the skies in blackness. Like, they would just go, shade, just nope, the Neck are coming, it's gone. So, and it's important to note that at this point, the Neck only acquired male warriors from their colonies. So, and the male warriors actually fought very, very fiercely and conquered, you know, the Green World and those surrounding planets within that solar system. So at first, during their conquering spree, they would enslave those conquered worlds, but they quickly realized that enslaving was kind of not as productive and far less profitable.
Okay.
So instead, what they decided to do was the worlds that they would conquer would be allowed to still govern themselves and, you know, allow everyone else to stay in power and, you know, okay, we're going to let you, you know, do your thing, but you're going to pay tribute to our kings and we won't destroy you. So
got him in a stronghold.
So they would pay tribute to the Neck Kings, which basically the Neck Kings established that money equals control. If you can take their profits, you can be in control, which is a huge theme with reptilian conspiracy and theory and whatnot, that those who are in control of the money have control of the world. Yeah. And I could go on for a very long time on how money is an absolute evil thing. I'm pretty sure it's the root of all evil. I'm not going to lie to you. Please. No,
that's what they say.
I'm pretty sure, man. Evil. I'm pretty sure. Like, listen, it's wonderful for, like, getting things that you want, but it's the people who misuse that bullshit that I worry about.
Absolutely.
Keb humans, again, more of the sort of evolution that we're going to go down with the Keb and the Neck and so many others. So the Keb humans would become a part of this conquest for power, and it would actually come to the streets of the Green World. And this was to create a financially sound front in the face of upcoming battles. So basically, they were going through and hitting their own planets first to go ahead and say, listen, this is what we're doing now. We are going to be the example of how these other worlds are going to be conquered. So straighten up. Pay me. Like, that's pretty much what it was for everyone.
Ruthless.
Ruthless. Just absolutely ruthless. So eventually the Keb would pretty much outlaw altogether, war altogether. So, because the Keb had had enough. The Keb was like, listen, we don't want to do this. You can take your bullshit somewhere else. We're just going to outlaw war altogether. And we're going to live in peace and prosperity. And our focus is going to be on prosperity and happiness. And that's going to be what our focus is ruled on. Or our rule is focused on, excuse me.
Okay.
So, which, I mean, in theory, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's gorgeous. I would love to live in that world, in theory. However, you have to understand the nature of the beings that you are dealing with. And that of the Neck, who then decided to start the Neck World Wars. We know where this is going.
Yeah, the Neck World Wars.
Neck World Wars. It was actually called the first Star Wars. In the book is what it was referenced to.
Original.
The original Star Wars. So the Neck pretty much could not have this. They were like, it was against their nature entirely to be peaceful and just leave whatnot alone. Like, they are conquerors. Like, they're warriors. They're fighters. They are a vicious, vicious species. So this would not end up being where the Neck stayed, but it would pacify for a little bit while they got their plans together. So the Neck World Wars would actually start on a business and financial front. So they pretty much went internal, where now casualty equaled financial ruin instead of death. Hmm. Which, again, going back to money equals control and power, That's how you, that's pretty much what their plan was entirely. They're just now going in on a smaller front, and then like, okay. It's kind of like a cancer. It's like working its way through the different parts of the body before it can become lethal.
Gotcha.
And now we have another subspecies, the neck keb. So they spawn
another group.
There's another group. Like I said, Beck T gave them a whole ass history. Like,
yeah, this is a lot deeper than what I.
They got a whole.
Really went into it.
They got a whole ass thing.
Yeah, Beck T really laid out the history.
I want Beck T as my kid's social studies teacher. I think he would be wonderful. Pay him whatever he needs. So the neck keb would actually spawn from the bloodline of one of the earlier neck kings. So the neck kings were, just side note, were like the all-powerful neck. Like, they were the most powerful within the bloodline. They were the most fiercest warriors. They were the ones with the most intellect, the most pull. So the neck keb were spawns of this bloodline. And they would actually be the ones to achieve this quote-unquote peace. And it can be all summed up in this one statement. And a prophet shall lead them all. Prophet.
Mm.
Think about that word for a hot second. And I don't want you to think about it in religious terms.
Okay.
So it was basically rulership through money. So little wordplay there. Yeah, prophet. Okay. Yeah, little wordplay there. I love a good wordplay.
Yeah.
Apparently so did the neck.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Didn't see that coming.
That was a red pill moment for me. I went, what the fuck? Hang on. Say that again. Like, rewind. We need to talk about this for a moment. So the neck kings were, you know, obviously never really satisfied with this peace and tranquility, yada, yada, yada. So then they would begin to look for more and other worlds to conquer. And they would actually kind of delve more into their technology in order to get to these other worlds and for more successful conquering, basically.
Okay.
So they actually began exploring their moons around the green world. And over time, they would actually colonize them, and they would lather, rinse, and repeat this process until they pretty much had a whole association of reptilian moon bases across the solar system.
Wow.
Now, just as a side note, and we're going to talk about this wonderful gentleman here in a moment, this is actually really similar to Mr. David Icke's moon matrix theory.
The moon matrix.
Yes. So just to summarize it a little bit, and this can be like its own episode within itself because it is like just so in depth. And David Icke is amazing in being able to go in depth into his theories and really explain the ins and outs of it. But the moon matrix theory basically is that our moon is like not a real moon. It's a base pretty much for reptilian, Illuminati, Freemason, like, and these are all just within the theory,
right?
You know,
right.
Not pointing fingers or anything. These are all within the theory. But it's not a moon at all. It's actually a control hub for which signals are being sent out to control the human population.
Wow. That's interesting. So there is a lot of stuff. Like, if you look into people talking about the moon, you know, the idea that it's hollow, you know, they talk about when the first moon landing happened, the moon rang,
mm-hmm.
like it was, you know, a bell, you know, like something, you know, if you thumped
a
hollow object, it reverberated. All that wild stuff, you know, what's on the dark side of the moon, mm-hmm. no one knows. The crazy images people will post of, you know, supposed moon bases. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that's always really interested me is the moon theories. Those are very interesting to me.
Ooh, we're going to have to dive deeper into that one because that was...
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
That was also another thing that I had like heard pray tell of, but then really kind of looking into it when David Icke said the moon matrix theory, because I love the matrix theory. That is, I think that's why I like reptilians so much too, because that's like reality is not what reality actually is. Yeah.
Plus, it's crazy too. It's like nowadays, like it's not even really considered a theory. Like it's a probability, like that we are just living in some sort of simulation. It's wild.
That's scary.
You know, it is scary. It is scary. That, you know, it's, you know, now a lot of scientists pretty much just say it's very probable that we are just living in a matrix.
Like, listen,
it's wild.
Listen, I'm already a very paranoid person. So I was both pleased and terrified hearing that. Like, it was it's a very weird feeling to be in at this merry moment in time. Yeah, but like, I mean,
it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild to think that, you know, a lot of people just kind of consider this. It's very probable that we are just living in some sort of simulation.
I wonder who's in control of the simulation. That's now what I'm interested in.
Reptilians, maybe.
Maybe. Neo, I need help. Come on. Need help. But not like the last movie, though. Like, just step the shit up, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
So the reptilians would go on and explore out into the cosmos. So their technology then became so advanced that they could travel at the speed of light and through wormholes. Yeah, that one. That's a hard word for me. I don't know why. Wormholes. It just doesn't sound right coming out of my mouth. I don't know. It's weird. So from there, they would begin more wars. So they would begin more of these conquests, and they would eventually land them on Eridanus, where Bekti is from. So now Bekti is like in the heart of the battle. So he'd been hearing all of the news and whatnot, and now the battle has come to where he is. So they would go on to exploit Eridanus, and they would actually have many galaxies before. And the way that they would do this was they would create puppets within places of power, pay tribute to the Net Kings. All hail the Net King, King of Heaven. That's what it was.
Okay. Oh, okay.
That's what it was. So they're as the next
kings, basically, they were like,
yeah, they're gods.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're freaking gods. I mean, like, how are you going to defeat this thing that has already conquered like 87 million worlds before you and is clear on the fact that they do not give a fuck if you live or die? Like, they will die for their king. They will die for it. It's craziness.
Yeah, it's some loyalty there.
Oh, yeah. So as the Neck Warriors moved from galaxies to galaxies, they were actually found that there are other races of warriors across the galaxy that would not be conquered so easily. So the Neck King was not prepared nor happy with his warriors being defeated. So this pretty much prompted the end of the Neck World Wars, end of the Star Wars, where the Net Kings would have to go back, regroup, and re-strategize how they were going to conquer more worlds. Because they weren't done. They just needed to know how to win.
Okay.
So this is when the reptilian Neck women were reintroduced to the battlefield. So many, many moons ago, Neck women were a part of battles and did fight side by side by male Neck warriors, but were taken out of the battle for somewhat unknown reason. I believe it may have been for breeding purposes.
Yeah, procreation.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make more soldiers.
Yep, got to have them. So the Neck women specifically were said to be both beautiful, or all beautiful, graceful, and very, very fierce warriors. So a couple things to know. Oh, yeah. Freaking
deadly, like, combination. Deadly,
yeah.
Combination there.
Like, beautiful, but deadly. Don't touch it. Don't make it mad. So a couple things that we need to know about the Neck women. So number one, which really amped them to be able to go back into battle, was the Neck women, I assume through evolution, could now choose if and when they could reproduce. So biologically, they did not have a menstrual system. So there was no menstrual system or cycle. Okay. So if they wanted to lay eggs and reproduce, they could if they wanted to. But then, just to add fuel to the fire, that particular female who did all of like the groundwork for the reproduction would not have to be the one to carry and support the eggs. This was basically
so you just pass off the
Yeah.
Responsibility to like a lesser. Okay.
Yeah. It was basically surrogacy. Like, okay. I mean, yeah. So
efficient way to do it.
Right. Yeah. Like, so they could just, you know, be out for a couple weeks and then, you know, right back in and not have to deal with, you know, laying eggs or doing any of that jazz. So the other thing is the women could actually shoot venom at their enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was a great defense mechanism. And it was actually discovered that when the venom was mixed with the adrenaline through biochemistry during battle, that venom would become more potent and more deadly.
Jesus.
So even more reason to send these bad bitches into battle.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Why not?
So
put them on the front line.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. So, and the women themselves just had a reputation of just being vicious in the battlefield. Like, they did not take prisoners. They were double tapping. Like, they ain't fucking around. They're like, no, I got to get home. I'm not dealing with this. Bye bye. However, it would become apparent to the Net Kings a little bit later on, not very much later on. Like, it's, the timelines are kind of weird because not long to them is like within a century. So like within that century.
Yeah, within the century, yeah.
Allowing and bringing female warriors back into the ranks of the armed forces would eventually reveal itself to be a big mistake for the Nick Kings.
Okay.
So over time, the Kingsmen and their associates would all die under mysterious circumstances, including that of the king himself.
Uh-oh.
Introducing the Queen of the Stars. So she was the fiercest reptile woman in the battles, and she would take over the king's spot and rule the reptilians in the net. So she would step into this new role, informing the people in the courts that their king had been assassinated and she would now rule the reptiles. Funny how she has all this damn detail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So she and a group of female neck warriors, to back her up, had already proven their superiority over the neck male soldiers. So, and she would go on to assure the people of the empire that they had nothing to fear or concern because she was in control of everything. Funny how she has to use fear, the word fear, like, ma'am, you're kind of, what do they call that? Projecting. Just a wee bit. But what's interesting is later autopsies done on the male higher-ups, including that of the king, would actually confirm that female venom was in their system at the time of their deaths. So, I'm saying she killed him, but I'm saying there was a bitch that did.
Definitely sounds suspect, that's for sure.
And now we get to a conspiracy within the conspiracy, which is that this was a conspiracy to turn the genders of the neck against one another. So that's just a side tidbit. Boy. That's wonderful. That was what that was. So the males related to the king in the association were all killed. Like, none of them got out. None of them survived. None of that, like, they were done. They were knocked out of the picture. And this was pretty much the queen's way of cleaning house to create a female-run empire.
Yikes.
So we are in this not together. That's for damn sure. So the female-run empire would go on to take over new worlds after an attack where the females would victor against strong male armies. So they were going after these worlds that were known to have races of warriors and just going in and being like, here we go. We're going to go win.
Damn.
Go team, go. And they did. And then other kings from around these different worlds and galaxies would, quote, admire the queen and ally with her, end quote. My personal theory is they didn't want to get their asses kicked or conquered, and were like, we're just going to be nice. And
That would be that'd be my theory as well.
Nope.
Can't beat them, join them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, we got to survive one way or the other. But very interestingly, and something that is also very prevalent within the reptilian conspiracies, is that of mind control. Queen would then introduce mind control, and she would do this through drugs that were used to increase the fierceness of her royal guard to further ensure no harm could come to her. So, the royal guard, which became known as the assassin, were warriors guarding the queen, and they would also be called the Waffen SS, like your Waffen. Waffen.
That's like a Nazi term, isn't it?
SS is, yeah.
Yeah, Waffen, I'm pretty sure, is as well. If I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure there was a Waffen SS on the Nazi side. So interesting. It's interesting.
There are some World War II parallels with this theory, with this as well, because the drug was called hashashim, which was said to have some of the same effects as meth, which, if you guys can recall or maybe didn't know, this was a similar tactic used in World War II when German soldiers were actually given meth on a daily basis to increase their performance.
Jesus.
Yeah, just drugging them up.
Yeah.
So,
what you gotta do, I guess.
I mean, fuck. I mean, that's one way of submission.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
So much like the Neck Kings, the Queen of the Stars would go on to also discover that the submit or be killed wasn't quite as productive, because many worlds would choose to just be killed instead of serve the empire. So the Mock, who were actually the guard under the king, much like the assassins for the queen, they were also dueled as bioscientists. So the queen would then instruct them to study mind control for the conquered worlds. And they would start with this by implementing a reward and punishment system. And then this would grow from only being used locally and local aspects to then being used worldwide with a lot farther proximity to where the signals were actually being transmitted from.
Okay.
So controlling whole worlds from a home base, basically.
Mm.
So what would eventually happen was the minds of the conquered would break, and then they would swear allegiance to the matriarch, and they would become a part of the Tok, which were a deadly army force for conquering. And like pretty much all of them would die for the queen. So once you have gone through this reward and punishment system, your mind would just break. You would swear your allegiance to the queen, and then you would become a part of this army where you would straight die for the queen without question.
Yeah.
So
it's like a beehive, isn't that kind of like how a beehive or an ant hill works? Like, don't they protect the queen?
They do. Yeah. Not like the drones and whatnot.
Yeah.
I got to fix this.
A lot of insect references in this reptilian episode.
That's kind of what I found interesting, too, was, again, going back to the dragonfly, that was just one aspect I did not expect.
Yeah, isn't there, like, insectoids? That's another alien race as well. I know there's, like, humanoids, insectoids, reptilians, greys, things like that.
It's a lot. I think Meriwether also wrote a book called Eden, Atlantis, and UFO Beliefs, I believe is what it's called.
Okay.
But he dives into a lot more of these theories and really gives like the ins and outs of, like, because the reptilians are also closely related to Atlantis as well. There is some pray tell of reptilians being a part of Atlantis, and may have even been the ones that abandoned their god, and that was Atlantis that fell.
Wow.
So there's some of that in there. You know what's super interesting, and we actually talked about as one of our betas too, is this mind control. You know they put fluoride in our water?
Yeah. Yeah, fluoride, yep.
Like, as soon as I started hearing about this, I was like, oh my god, this is like the fluoride in the water.
There's some people that really don't like the fluoride.
I don't blame
I watched him. A documentary about it not too long ago, about where there's like certain people that like go to elaborate measures to get fluoride out of their water system. But also there's like towns that have completely banned fluoride, and their dental foundation just goes to shit like immediately after it. Yeah, there's like a town in Canada that completely outlawed the fluoride from their water. And within like years, their like teeth were falling out, and you know, kids were having like mass, you know, cavity infestations in their mouth where they weren't getting any fluoride. So it's an interesting thing.
Oh man,
there's a lot of different sides to that coin, just like every conspiracy. But yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was my first thought, though. I was like, oh my god, it's fluoride, but also a paranoid person. So that is the somewhat 50,000 foot overview, somewhat detailed history of the reptilians, and kind of where they may have originated from. So again, referencing back to talking about how this touches every single corner of the universe, or of the world, I mean.
The universe too. I mean,
the universe, yeah, I guess.
Space-faring race.
That's so true.
A lot of exploring and conquering.
So conquering galaxies, that's for damn sure. So we also see a lot of reference to reptilians within our own religion and culture across the world. So
I think a notable one that, you know, I don't know if people bring up a lot is, you know, just like if you look in a biblical sense, mm-hmm. you look at the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Where man is tempted by a snake.
Yes.
Reptilian snake. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
It is. And it's also mentioned in Isaiah and in Revelations of the Bible as well. On Isaiah, there's mention of the viper and the fiery flying serpent, Leviathan, who's yep. described as the piercing serpent, the dragon of the sea as well. And then in Revelations, the great dragon and the old serpent, which is also compared to or similar to the description of the devil as well.
Yep.
And then we also see it in Hinduism with the Naga people, who are a divine, semi-divine race of half-human, half-serpent people who live in the netherworld, the Patala. And the Patala is a subterranean levels of the earth. So like they're way down deep there in the earth. And okay. this is, again, from Hinduism, so India, Middle East. And the Naga people appear in one of three ways. They can either appear entirely human with snake heads on their neck. So I kind of imagine like a total human with like a snake head, like necklace, I think is what we're getting at there. I don't know. Common serpents that appear around the area, and then a half human, half snake figure. Which is very interesting. I wonder if it would be like a satyr. And the Nagas were actually said to be a powerful, splendid, wonderful, and proud semi-divine race that can manipulate their form, which is also really, really in there with reptilian theory, is that they are shapeshifters. And then we even see it again in Chinese mythology, where there's the legend of the white snake, which is the Chinese legend centering around the romance of a man and a snake spirit. Now, this one is interesting because it is the only story I could find in reference to reptilians that is actually good towards humans.
So an actual like good like encounter between a man and
yes. Okay. Yes. So what happens is this man as a young boy eats these beans that he gets from a vendor in town, and these beans turn out to be pills that are like immortality pills. And it come to find out he gets them from one of the eight immortals, which are like very big Chinese mythology gods.
Okay.
I don't know much about Chinese mythology. I apologize. But so the boy goes back to the vendor, the one of the eight immortal gods, and is like, I haven't eaten for 3 days. I don't know what this is. So the immortal god reveals himself and then is like, I gave you immortality pills. And then lo and behold, I would assume the immortal was just kind of like, well, if you won't be grateful, I'm just going to take them back. Because he then holds the boy upside down over the West Lake and then like shakes him until he vomits up the pills into the lake. So he's like, if you're not going to be grateful, just take them back. But unbeknownst to all them, right. But unbeknownst to them, the white snake spirit was actually in the lake, and she ate the pills, and she gained about 500 years worth of magical powers. And this would intertwine their fates forever. So many, many years later, the snake spirit would transform herself into a human so that she may go meet this boy who is now a man. They would meet and fall in love, and they would get married. Also, many years later after their marriage, a jealous spirit tortoise, yeah, a jealous spirit tortoise who was jealous of the fact that the snake spirit had gained this much power so quickly and so easily from what he could understand, or from what they could understand, I should say, that he would give the man a wine that would transform his wife into her natural form, which the man did not know that his wife was actually a snake spirit. So this was going to be a bit of a shock. So the man, thinking he had a gorgeous wine for his lovely bride, brings it over to her, and lo and behold, she turns into a snake, and he does what anyone would do and dies from shock.
Yeesh.
So,
yeah. What are you going to do?
Hell, I mean, you just die.
The least you would not expect that to happen. You would. Surely that would have just rattled every sense you had.
Absolutely. Because he had no idea. He was what the frick?
Yeah, I'm sure that's the last thing he expected to happen.
But the story does not end there, because the snake spirit would then employ the help of a friend whom she had met among her many journeys, and they would go to Mount Emmy, where they would steal an herb to save the man's life. And the man, upon realiving upon the consumption of this herb, would maintain the love for his wife, and they would go on to have many more adventures.
Oh, that's sweet.
How beautiful! How beautiful! Yeah, that is the only story of a good reptilian. Only one. Hope you all enjoyed it. Now we're going to go back to talking about something even more malevolent, which is the djinn or the genie. Have you ever heard of a djinn or genie?
I have heard kind of things about djinns. Mm-hmm. Genies, I just know the typical mainstream, Robin Williams, Will Smith, whatever, Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Those genies.
Yeah.
Sinbad, if you're from an alternate reality. I don't know. That's basically where my knowledge of genies begins and ends there. They give you three wishes.
Yeah.
There's a movie I watched as a kid. It's a horror film. I think it's called Djinn, if I remember correctly, or Warlock, one of the two. I think it's called Djinn, where, it's a horror take on it, where genie offers you three wishes, and it's always something, terrible. You wish for, long life, and it, locks you in a casket or some shit, like that. That kind
of it's thing. You have to be super specific.
Yes.
Honestly, fairies are a little bit like that in Celtic pagan. They are not fairies are well and good. I want to be really nice, because don't come for me.
Don't want to offend the fairies.
I don't want to offend the fairies, man. But they are wonderful beings. However, they are very mischievous. And if you ask them for anything, you have to be very, very, very specific. There's also a thing where you're not allowed to tell a fairy your name, because name is control. And if you give a fairy your name, that fairy can then control you if they wish.
Oh, wow. I never knew that. That's interesting.
It's wild. I don't fuck with fairies, man. I don't fuck with fairies. Oh, yes, but genies and djinns. So these are typically invisible creatures, and they are actually depicted in very, very early religion, pre-Islam Arabia. And they were neither inherently good nor inherently bad, probably due to that sort of trickster-esque, where it's you kind of have to be super specific with them, and you knowingly have to be super specific. So if you don't do it, it's kind of on you. I think that's where a little bit of that comes from.
Okay.
But genies can change their form at will. So shapeshifters. And they do favor the form of a snake, but can also appear as scorpions, lizards, or humans. And what's interesting and we haven't really heard of, is they can actually engage in sexual affairs with humans and reproduce offsprings.
Oh.
So we can get a genie gen mix with a human and it be like this magical being.
Hmm. Sounds like the plot of like some kind of like YA novel. Young adult novel.
Oh yeah. I was like, YA, what?
Yeah. I could see that being like a Twilight-esque thing, you know, some.
That's true. That might be cool.
Half genie, yeah.
I bet it's out there.
Oh, probably.
I bet it's out there. But it kind of reminded me of the woman back in July who saw something on the plane and she was like deathly terrified of it. She is like, yeah. That is not real. It is not real. Like, here's the thing. There's been like behavior analysts who have gone back and have like looked at that footage. And I'm a little skeptical sometimes because you never know like the whole detail of that story because it was first released on TikTok. But the behavior analyst looked at it and he's like, whatever she's looking at, like she's genuinely afraid of.
That's the thing. Like, do we know who she was looking at? Do we know like the passenger? Is that like a thing that anyone's brought up?
We know that it was the passenger sitting right next to her.
Imagine if you were that guy, just like a guy, you're getting on your flight, ready to go, and this woman just starts freaking out and like throwing all kinds of accusations at you, like. Imagine being that guy.
Oh my god!
Whether he's a omnipotent being or not,
yeah,
or omnipotent being or not, you know, just imagine you're just some guy just chilling out, and all of a sudden this woman starts freaking out, making all kinds of claims about you not being a real, you know, real person.
It's like men already have enough accusations they have to worry about being thrown at them. Reptilian was definitely not on the list until now. But yeah, it was the guy sitting next to her and she basically like leaped over top of him to get away from him. And she just kept like pointing at him and was like, he is not real. Like, I'm getting off this plane. And she says that she saw him blink and expose a reptilian eye is what happened. And like, it's kind of up for debate still as of recording, like whether or not this woman like, you know, was kind of having a panic attack, whether she was, you know, sleep deprived or she may have even taken something to relax prior to the flight. There's all kinds of things that could be going on. There's even speculation of, you know, it was a stunt for attention. But when you look at it and you hear like her shrill in her voice, like she is borderline in hysterics. Like, that's the thing that gets me is, like, I've had panic attacks before, and she sounds like she's getting ready to have a panic attack.
Jeez.
So, I hope as of release, there's more that's come out on that. I want to hear an interview with her and be like, what did you see?
Yeah.
What happened? Bitch, tell me everything.
I'm surprised there isn't. Yeah, what's that?
Just tell me everything. I'm here with my 420 mug. We got this. We will get through it. So, aside from religious aspects and cultural stories and legends and whatnot, there's also been very, very many, many writings on reptilians. Most notably, the two that I'm getting ready to talk about next. The first being Robert E. Howard, who was author of The King Cole's Tales, which was published in Weird Tales of the Shadow Kingdom in 1929. And this story, like, compelled readers of the serpent men who were created by at an unknown time ago by the great serpent god. And this was established to be, like, eons and millions of years ago.
Okay.
So in this one, in Robert E. Howard's tales, there's definitely clear ties of the serpent men to Atlantis. And it's interesting because in these tales as well, they also focused heavily on sorcery and alchemy these serpent men would practice. So it's like they're from Atlantis. They are said to have sorcery and alchemy. But what if that is just like super advanced scientific and technological practices instead of sorcery and alchemy, like medicine, tech?
Yeah.
All kinds of different things. Because, I mean, if you take someone from like, I don't know, 1809 and bring them to 2023, they're going to be like, the devil and witchcraft is everywhere. which I mean isn't wrong, but I mean they're going to think that in different aspects. So the serpent men in Howard's tellings did rule over humans, but they were defeated and nearly wiped out by the humans. And the humans would go on to refer to them as the Elder Things. So the Elder Things kind of moved underground and got really quiet. And then they would again be discovered and defeated because they again tried to take over the humans. And they would actually be cast out this time, but this would not deter them from trying again and again and again. I should mention that Robert E. Howard's tellings are fictional, whereas we've been talking about a lot of nonfiction. This is now a fictional telling.
Like writing like novels or
this is storytelling at this point. We've talked about a lot of true occurrences. This is now the nonfiction part. So Robert E. Howard, going on in his King Cole story, the Elder Ones would front as a snake cult religion. So shape-shifting into humans looking like ourselves. Mm-hmm. We are now the snake cult religion. And this would work up in the ranks of power and influence in their homeland of Valcia. And it would pretty much involve their plot being to have the serpent men disguise themselves as ruling monarchs to secure power, and then they would murder the human monarch and assume the role and like totally like morph into that character and then be able to rule as the face of the monarch with their devious intentions. It would be that of an Atlantean barbarian who would be the one to put an end to the cult and the serpent men. He learned of their tactics and he basically Spartacus that bullshit and was like, we done. Listen, if you have not watched Spartacus, you have got to watch it. It is amazing.
I watched it when it first came out. I watched the first season of it when it was first airing.
I love it. Ben's watched it all the way through and he said there's only like two of the main people that survive, and I keep trying to guess and I'm like, which one is it? Because I don't want to fall in love with a character and then have them die.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah.
Like, it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's so heartbreaking. So the Serpent Men, after being destroyed by the Atlantic Barbarian, would escape to Yoth, which was located in North America, and they would build underground cities, which is kind of shadows what we talked about in Journey Through Mount Shasta, where the underground cities in California were.
Yes, under Mount Shasta, yeah.
Yeah.
Richard Shaver talks about that a little, you know, Richard Shaver talks about that a lot, about the Hollow Earth kind of stuff. So, yeah, that kind of stuff all falls in there.
Yes, and that's in File 013, if you guys want to go check that one out. Really great stuff in there. So the downfall of the Serpent Men, again, because, you know, they learn in the hard way over there. They're having many ups and downs. But the final downfall of the Serpent Men would be when they abandoned their patron god, Yig. And as punishment, Yig laid a curse, forcing the few remaining Serpent Men to flee into cavern beneath Mount Rumardith. So the Serpent Men did look like reptiles with scaled skin and snake-like heads, and they also possessed magical abilities. Some stories even do have that if someone was killed by one of these Serpent Men, their spirit would then become enslaved to that particular serpent. So what I imagine happening is this serpent, it has now taken your human form, and your spirit is now like enslaved to this serpent, now your human form.
Okay.
Which is creepy as all fuck.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So Robert E. Howard definitely has a very interesting storytelling on the reptilians in the King Cole tales. Super freaking cool. Now, also wrote a story called The Nameless City. And this came out in 1921. And if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm talking about H.P. Lovecraft. I love me some Lovecraft. He's great. He's awesome. But he wrote The Nameless City in 1921, which takes place in an Arabian desert. And the whole plot of this is this man, we never really get his first name or a true location of where we are. Like
that's kind of like part of a lot of Lovecraft stuff, isn't it? And a lot of like
it's mysterious,
unnamed characters. Yeah, locate mysterious locations. Yeah.
It's meant to like drop you into the story, I think, just to be like, let me get you totally immersed. But he went out looking for this temple on a quest to pretty much confirm if the temple was actually human made, because in the village around people from which it originated with, it was pretty much like a curse. Like, they just would not talk about it. Like, spit on the ground as soon as you hear about it. Like, we don't talk about it. We ain't fucking with it.
Mm.
So, upon entering this temple, he would notice that the altars were in smaller proportions. And there were these winding paintings all on the walls that curved around the altar. There were also chiseled doors in the rock leading down descending steps. The steps themselves were actually very interesting because they were all narrow and steep, but most notably, our storyteller really could not differentiate between whether or not these were steps or footholds.
Mm.
So, you know, like how over time, like if you're walking like up a dirt step, you can kind of over time create your own little footholds and path and whatnot. It was actually, it's quite poetic, this next line, and I included it because it is so poetic. As he was going down these steps, the wind actually blew his torch out, and Lovecraft describes the darkness as the unreverberated blackness of the abyss.
Ooh.
How beautiful is that?
Yeah, very, very poetic.
So as our
all words,
he's beautiful with words. It's amazing. There's sometimes I have to like take a moment and be like, what are you trying to say? I don't understand. Hang on. Just for reference, I listened to this book 3 times before understanding like all of it in completeness. So if you got to listen to it a few times, it's fine. He's a very intricate motherfucker. I ain't gonna lie. So when our storyteller reached the bottom, he actually walked around and he felt and discovered rows of cases made of wood and glass that were eerily in this similar shape of that of a coffin. So it was very, very dark. And there was a point in time where a subterranean phosphorescence underground light, which is created with like different minerals, and there's a whole process.
Yeah,
big brain stuff.
Yeah.
So through this underground light, he would be able to see the amazing murals that were painted on the walls and these glass cases that he was feeling he could now see. And he realized that these were golden wooden cases with exquisite glass fronts that contained the mummified forms of some type of creature of the reptilian form. So they were the size of a small man, delicate arms and legs, and hands and feet that were similar to that of a human. However, a head that HP says violated all biological principles. Comparisons varied from a cat to that of a bulldog to a satyr to a human. So
A lot of different things in there.
A lot of different things. And kind of, Ben and I were talking about this, and I was just kind of trying to picture what this might look like. And we kind of settled on the satyr part being like bottom half reptilian, man and cat kind of mixed around in the middle, and then like the face of a bulldog with like jowls and sharp teeth.
I know in popular media, reptilian and feline features get kind of meshed in.
Mm-hmm.
I know like the 90s era Godzilla had the same thing. The 90s era Godzilla had like a feline face, even though it was clearly a reptile. So I know there's stuff like that.
Interesting.
I've seen in pop culture.
Just give Godzilla like a ball of yarn in this new one coming up.
It could be, yeah.
Like,
it's like it clearly has a feline face.
Well, cats kind of do that same thing too, where once they close their mouth, you can't really see their mouth. Like, I don't know. That would explain why some cats are fucking assholes.
A lot of cats are fucking assholes.
I'm
not a cat guy.
Not a cat. No, me neither. Anna has cats, and those are pretty much the only cats I'm like, yeah, I can tolerate them. Yeah, they're good. Oh, Kaluga too. But Eric's looking over at me like, what about Kaluga? Kaluga hides from me. Where were we at? Okay, yes, making comparisons of what these creatures looked like. Okay, here we go. So one thing that was also notable about these mummified creatures is they were dressed in their most lavish clothing and covered in gold and jewels and pretty much their heavenly best. And around these coffins, our storyteller was pretty much able to read the whole history through the murals that surrounded this giant tomb, communal tomb, basically. So they were a great race of intelligent beings and of status. And what's interesting is the village people would actually not mention the nameless city. It was almost like it was a curse within itself. And they're down the nameless city, the beings there, their downfall would actually come when they were forced to go underground and they were feared and pretty much forgotten. Now, there wasn't much of the mural to kind of indicate what happened with their downfall. But what our storyteller was able to see that a human figure was being torn into pieces in one of the last painted murals. Which is super eerie because even in the story, our omniscient teller tells us that, points out, I should say, that he was the only other human figure there other than the one that was being torn apart in the mural, which is very creepy and just...
Yeah, absolutely. Gross. Pretty ominous.
It's like if you need a warning that these things are not going to be friendly, let's start here. So it was incredibly dark in this tomb with just that little hint of light. And then our storyteller would then come to hear a deep, low moaning sound. And there was a ton of wind that somehow was down there. And I mean, I don't quite understand how these things work and how there could be wind that far underground. But there was wind that was pulling him into the darkness. And in this epic battle where he struggled to gain balance again, once he did, he then heard a shrill shriek right behind him. And as he turned, he then met an eon's worth of a nightmare horde of rushing devils, as H.P. Lovecraft would say. And these were the beings of the Nameless City. By this point, they had evolved into being half transparent because of how dark it was down there. And they were actually crawling on the floor, which would explain why the proportions of the temple were that of so little, because they were about half the size of humans. And unfortunately, our storyteller was never heard from again after entering the Nameless City.
Damn.
So that is some of our current, well, not really current, but some of our more interesting tales of reptilians. H.P. Lovecraft always like really shocks me and surprises me, as I'm sure he would love to know. Just because he's got such a scary and eerie way of telling stories and whatnot. And love him to death.
Yeah, his stuff is great. I didn't know he had like that. He had like reptilian mythos in there as well. That's interesting.
Oh yeah. He touches kind of these weird, like these very, very violent beings, I suppose, because he does the same thing with like Cthulhu, and then there's a few other ones. I haven't read all of them yet, but they're interesting and cool. And plus, I love the way he tells stories as well. It's like he's not afraid to get a little bit more vicious in his storytelling, which I love. So you ready to talk about Mr. David Icke?
Let's talk about David Icke. That's a name you can't leave out of the reptilian rule conversation.
He is the grandpapa of the reptilian conspiracy. He pretty much brought it to like the forefront. Little bit of background on Mr. Icke. He was actually a football reporter from England who had a football career. For us here in the US, that is soccer. And he actually ended his football career due to arthritis, which sucks. My poor Jipper has arthritis, and it's not fun. But Mr. David Icke really made headlines when he appeared on the Terry Morgan Show in 1991. On this show, he would claim to be the son of God and that the world would end later that year. Mr. Icke,
it's a way to make some waves.
I know, and like he donned this turquoise colored windbreaker too. Okay. Like it was interesting. It's an interesting interview, but he does point out something very interesting in that interview in particular, and he says like, because the interviewer Terry Morgan says all these people are laughing at you, like, what are you doing? And he said, well, if I had appeared 2,000 years ago and proclaimed to be the son of God, then everyone else would have laughed at me then too.
Well, yeah.
I'm like, oh, man's got facts.
Yeah.
The man came prepared. So Mr. David Icke would go on to write a series of books describing in large detail how the earth was being run by shape-shifting reptiles and that we are prisoners of a reptile, Satanist, even pedophile groups. Note real quick, just to touch on that Satanist portion of that, there are a lot of encounters, theories, retellings of stories of groups or of people who are suspected to be reptilian who have participated in satanic ritual and or human sacrifice. This all began for David Icke when he actually heard a voice inside of his own head speak to him while he was at the store with his son. It instructed him to look at the books on the far side in March of 1990. What the books were, I did not find out. I need to talk with him. I need to find out what the books were. But this started all of it. This was moment.
That's the catalyst.
This was the moment.
Okay.
So David Icke has this theory. I say theory lightly because I don't really know what other word to use, but it's called the Babylonian Brotherhood. We're just going to touch on it. So this timeline goes all the way back to ancient Egypt when the founder of Babylon, Nimrod, and his wife, Queen Semiramis, reigned.
Sam Raimi.
Yeah, Sam Raimi!
Yeah,
oh my God, he's a reptilian. You shook hands with a reptilian.
I didn't shake hands with him.
That's right. That's why he didn't shake your hand. He was like, I'm not touching these humans.
No, you're thinking of Ted and Sam. They're two different people.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Two totally different people.
I was excited. I was very excited. I was like, oh my God, Ty met one. Like, is he okay? Nimrod, I don't want to say Nimrod because that's exactly how it's spelled, is Nimrod.
I mean, it's spelled.
I know, but I'm just like, someone's going to be in the comments and be like, it is pronounced Nimrod. Like,
Nimrod.
So, guys, I'm sorry. We're going to call it Nimrod. We're going to call it Nimrod. Otherwise, my brain's going to break.
Yeah.
So Nimrod was actually said to be a mighty tyrant and one of the giants. That is actually interesting because after a mighty flood, the Arabs actually believed that Nimrod was the rebuilder of the city, and he would actually expand into farther lands and build more cities, which later on, one of these cities in which he built would actually be the location of where the Sumerian tablets were found. They go a lot into like the evidence of giants and whatnot, which Nimrod was said to be one of them. And he was also actually said to be one of the descendants of Noah, which is very interesting because he did rebuild the city after this great flood, quote unquote.
I've always noticed there is a lot of like biblical references with the reptilian stuff, right? Like,
yes. Shit ton. Like there is even reference in banned books from the Bible of reptilians. The Book of Enoch probably being one of the biggest ones. The Book of Enoch not only mentions reptilians, but it also mentions giants as well. And it also
juicy.
It also has a little bit to do with the Anunnaki as well. The Book of Enoch is something that we're going to go into far more detail in a little bit later. I freaking love it. That's one that I keep coming back to that I'm like, I don't understand how this isn't mainstream.
Yeah, how it isn't talked about more. Absolutely. Yeah, that's one that a lot of people don't really know about, but there's some crazy stuff around that book. So yeah, definitely something we need to cover at some point.
Yes.
For sure.
Just need to do like a banned book conspiracy. Like, why are these books banned?
Yeah, books banned from the Bible. I mean, mm-hmm. that's pretty interesting concept. I mean, in itself.
I always hated that the Book of Lilith was banned from the Bible. I'm like, I want to know what you did to her. Like, tell me. I must know. Nimrod and Semiramis were actually both said to be of reptilian bloodlines. They may have actually been the start of a recent reptilian bloodline. And their bloodline came from, or were known as, it's a little unclear there, as the Titans. So giant Titans. So with Nimrod and Semiramis being of the reptilian bloodline, the Serpent Brotherhood or the Babylonian Brotherhood was born. And the bloodline itself would actually predestine those who were in power in all corners of the earth. So this leads us into finance and power of the world. David Icke has this theory that 13 families, only 13 families, run the entire world. And a lot of these 13, and all of these 13 families, excuse me, are of that Babylonian bloodline. So, big, big deal. So, they are from this ancient serpent bloodline who, you know, is of the Titans, who are descendants of Noah, from a mighty tyrant. There we go. So, all of the families that rule this world have some sort of amount of this bloodline in their biological chemistry. And these range all over the world, from Western politics to the royal family to the Middle East. There is nowhere that the human population can hide from being under power of these reptilian rulers. There's actually a theory that's very interesting that each American president is actually selected by the closeness of their reptilian bloodline by the college.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Like, that's interesting. I got questions.
That is interesting.
Also,
David Icke has talked about that on a few occasions. Yeah.
Yes. He also talks a lot about the royal family, which does fit into the reptilian mold a little bit too well. as mentioned earlier, the reptilians, specifically that of the neck, had a thing for ceremony and ritual, as well as dressing in their finest and jewels. And they had one of the longest, actually the longest, monarchies in history. We're talking about the dearly departed Queen Elizabeth II, who ruled for 70 plus years, being the longest reigning ruler or monarch ever in history.
Yeah.
There's also ties within the royal family to that of William of Orange or William III, who also has ties to Nimrod and Nimrod's bloodline. And there is something to be said for how long royals in general, I'm talking about through the UK, through the Assiniboine Kingdom, which is in Africa, also African kingdoms, Germany, and even China, how long those ruling monarchs live. Queen Victoria actually lived well until her 80s when the life expectancy at the time was that of the early 40s. So she lived double.
I mean, you could argue with something like that. You could argue it's, you know, they are a higher class, you know, a very important person.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that they are subject to, you know, greater medical attention,
right,
and, you know, higher just higher quality of life in general.
Yes,
just because the way they are kind of, you know, put on a pedestal. I mean, you can argue that, but it is pretty interesting when you think that the lifespan of these people who are in power greatly exceeds us normal folk.
The one of the recent, I don't know if he's like an emperor or a ruler, but anyway, one of the rulers of China, he actually died in 2014 at the great old age of 105.
Wow.
Like, woof.
Putting in the years.
I know, putting in that time.
I don't feel like I'd want to live that long.
I don't think I would either, honestly. Like, I mean, I don't know. At that point, you're just watching history repeat itself. Yeah. I don't know.
What can you do at that age, anyways? You're bedridden at that point.
Yeah, like
eating soup and stuff. It's No, no. Like, I don't think I'd want to live that.
Your family's down your neck because they're like, when's he gonna croak?
Yeah.
When's he leaving? Like, give me that inheritance, Papa. Like, but however, David Icke has a very, he is convinced that the Rothschilds are a part of reptilians, the Rothschilds family in the UK especially. And Nathan Mayer Rothschild did not help his theory at all, because this mofo decided to say to the public out loud, I care not what puppet is placed on the throne of England to rule the empire. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire, and I am in charge of the money supply.
Yeah, not helping himself.
Nope, he didn't help. He didn't help at all. Which then leads us to into a very interesting process that David Icke calls problem solution resolution. I wrote problem, solution, problem, and I know that's not correct. Excuse me. So this was by David Icke, and this was basically the formula for a profitable market crash. Basically, the people in power plan the market crash. So how do we do this? We start with step number one, which is to create the problem and blame someone else. Right. And you that way, you are pointing the focus and the finger on someone that is not you. That way, when you report the problem to the media, you then create a public outcry and a public outrage, leading to step number three, where the public has, you know, done their outcry and had their outrage. They are then demanding that something must be done, leading to part three, which is to present your preconceived solution to the angry public, therefore saying, listen, I know you're upset about the apple crisis, but what I got is grapes. Grapes are more expensive, but I ain't got no apples. So you're going to take the grapes and you're going to pay more because that's what you want. Then you act on the solution to solve the problem you created in order to control the outcome. So if you know the market will crash, you can then plan and control the people in power. Or you can then plan and control from the stance of the people in power. We actually see this a lot during times of war, where we will see two countries go to war with one another and then allied with the same country. So a lot of times what happens is war is very, very expensive. It can be detrimental to an economy. So what will happen is the countries in war will borrow from the same ally, and then we'll become indebted to that same ally. So while the countries were at war fighting one another, this ally was getting richer and richer and more powerful and indebting both countries that were at war. So what happens at the end of that war when both the countries have now found peace? Now they're indebted to the same country, therefore under the control of the same ally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Too much sense.
Too much sense, man. That's what I'm saying. Bortega red pills today. Like, I listened to that and I went, hold up, David. Hang on. We've got to, no. There's also just, and we can do a whole other episode if you guys want, but there is also a whole thing on mind control that David Icke goes into, especially that of trauma-based mind control that gets used a lot in wars as well. It actually became very prevalent in World War II with Josef Mengele, which, like I said, we're not going to go into huge detail about it today, but that is something that we can go into because that also goes in hand with this problem solution resolution. But the main thing is money being the control factor. The one who holds the money is the one that holds the control.
Yeah.
So with all of that being said, we come to our final segment, which is when it's going to get real, real creepy, because you know things get real when it starts coming into our own entertainment land. We're going to talk about film, and we're going to start talking about the lovely Mr. Stanley Kubrick. Have you ever seen Eyes Wide Shut?
I've never seen Eyes Wide Shut.
I haven't seen it either.
I've seen Kubrick's other movies. Mm-hmm. I've never seen Eyes Wide Shut, though.
I haven't seen this one either. I don't think I've seen any of his other movies. This one was in 1999, and it was a erotic, mysterious, psychological drama that was directed.
It's an orgy.
Yes.
Yeah. Me and Mike actually talk a bit about that in American Pie.
Oh, my God.
Because it can't somehow. But yeah, I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an orgy movie. I know that. I've heard it referenced and things, yes. But I've never actually seen it. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So basically, the whole... I have a 50,000-foot overview of a plot, but it's super confusing. Because here's the thing. Like, this doctor finds out that he is... this doctor finds out that his wife has fantasized about cheating with him with, like, multiple men and, like, won't sleep with him. And he is, like, getting sequestered and acquiesced for sex, like, left, right, and in the middle. And he, like, keeps saying no. And then he wakes his wife up, who then his wife tells him that she was dreaming of having sex with multiple different men in front of him. So then he tries to pretty much, like, round robin to try to get one of these acquiesce to act on their sexual, you know, it's fucking weird. Yeah. It's fucking weird. So then he has this friend who is a piano player who is going to play the piano at this mansion, but he's playing it blindfolded because there's this orgy going on. So the doctor then rents a costume and a mask, goes to the orgy, gets found out, is told to not speak of his experiences and to keep this place a secret. And then, like, through all kinds of different events, two of the people, including the blindfolded piano player, and then one of the women I believe he tried to sleep with at the orgy, are either dead or missing come the end of the movie. And then, to just confuse the ever-loving fuck out of me, he tells his wife what's transpired over the past 2 days, and then the wife suggests that they fuck as soon as possible, and then everything is fine.
And that's the end.
That's the end! And I'm like, what the fuck?
I am, yeah, wow.
Stanley, you were going through a dry spell during this time.
Quite the film. I've never seen that movie. I didn't know that was what it was about. I thought it was just gonna, like,
it's so weird. I don't even know.
Thriller. I didn't know it was, had all that in it.
Listen, the only other movie that has left me this dazed and confused was Thanksgiving 3.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't even see this one. Like, I just read the plot on Wikipedia and I was like, what the hell?
How does this fall in the reptilian?
This falls into the reptilian because the orgy scene. Okay. In Eyes Wide Shut is actually rumored to be a mild version of a reptilian ceremony. And what's very interesting is Stanley claimed to have pulled this experience from his own knowledge and from his own experience.
Oh.
So he's basically retelling in a very mild form what these reptilian ceremonies look like. Ah, and just to add fuel to the fire, unfortunately, Kubrick died very shortly after just showing the film to the Warner Brothers production. And
last movie.
And there were 25 minutes cut from the film that is yet to be seen by the public.
Wow.
25 minutes.
Nice. Kubrick is a pretty controversial guy and just in general. Cause, you know, a lot of people claim that he is he was the director of the moon landing. He directed
the
fake moon landing that people saw. That's something that people, that's a conspiracy theory around him. If you ever seen 2001: A Space Odyssey, it's a great sci-fi movie. But yeah, people claim that's him, that he directed the moon landing that we all saw. You know, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, that was him. Mm-hmm. There's actually a movie with Ron Perlman and Rupert Grint, the kid that played Ron in
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
There's a movie called Moon Men.
Okay.
That's about that. It's like about that conspiracy theory.
I now have a movie that I'm going to make Ben watch with me. That's freaking
After
cool.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes. He already told me. He saw Eyes Wide, because I have this big board that I put all my research on. That's basically me just jotting down things as, like, I'm listening to books or videos or whatever. And like, he saw Eyes Wide Shut and he just looked at it and he went, I'm not watching that. I'm not doing it. Nope. I'm like, what is so wrong with this movie? And then I found out. Because, you know, I go in very naively, like, oh, it's going to be fine. Like, because he also said that this was, he reportedly claimed that Eyes Wide Shut was his greatest contribution to the art of cinema.
Oh. Wow.
So, I mean, that's freaking awesome for that to have to be, like, his last film and whatnot. But that also made me, like, want to watch it. Because I'm like, what did you do? Like, what is the cinematography like? I have to know. Also, you know, adding fuel to the fire of the reptilian conspiracy was the 1998 John Carpenter, They Live. I love this movie. Ty was actually
quintessential. That's like the quintessential reptilian movie. If you want to see a reptilian movie, that's where you go.
It really is. And Ty was actually the one that introduced me to this film. It's not often that Ty introduces me to a good movie.
I watch nothing but good movies. Good movie is all about perspective.
That's true.
Every movie I watch, I think it's good. Well, I think that's they're all true. Shitty, but I find joy in them. I know they're shitty, but
I mean, yeah,
they that's, bring joy to me.
That's all that matters is when you find the joy in them. But I freaking love this movie. Rodney Piper plays
Roddy Piper.
Roddy Piper, thank you so
Roddy
much.
Roddy Piper, the hot Rodney, rod.
The hot rod. He is a good looking man.
Oh, he's my favorite. He's my favorite. It's Macho Man and Roddy Piper. Those are my two favorite wrestlers.
Oh, nice. He's got super tight jeans in this film. Like I was watching.
Noticed.
I did notice, thank you. I was just watching and I'm watching how he's moving and like doing construction work. And I'm like, listen, I have a hard time getting throughout the day in skinny jeans. How the fuck are you doing it in those? Like, I have questions. But he would move into town during an economic crisis. He's actually from Denver and he moves into this small town and finds work as a construction worker.
Yeah, John Nada.
John Nada. Mr. Nada. Nada means nothing in Spanish, so I mean,
that's yep.
Nothing, John.
It's a very think of just a very generic name. Mm-hmm. John Carper gave him on purpose.
Yeah,
you know, John is like the most common name.
That's true.
Ever and then Nada, nothing. He's just every man.
Yeah,
basically what the idea is. He's
really kind of sinks into the film like this is anybody. Like this is anybody here. Ooh, that's creepy. But Mr. Nada finds a group by accident who are making these sunglasses, which expose humans and the beings among us. And They Live was actually based on the 1963 short called 8 o'clock in the Morning by Ray Nelson.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's a short film or a short story?
Short film, I do believe.
Okay. Oh, I never knew that. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah. 8 o'clock in the Morning.
See about that.
By Ray Nelson for those.
I'll have to look. I have like the Scream Factory like definitive edition Blu-ray.
Oh, fucking cool.
I'll have to see if that's on there. See if
yes.
Scream Factory does some awesome stuff when they put out these definitive Blu-rays. They put some crazy stuff on them.
That's fucking awesome.
I'll have to check it.
I need to know. So Nada would actually see that the humans are asleep and being controlled by an alien race, which can disguise themselves as humans, unless someone is wearing these special sunglasses. So to the naked eye, everything looks fine. But when you put these sunglasses on, you can see these like alien beings, which just kind of look like humans without their skin, like just the muscular form of humans. And then like you can see on billboards where it says like obey, stay asleep, reproduce, just controlling the humans. And we're just kind of moving through these motions. So throughout the story, Nada would recruit more people to wear the sunglasses whilst being hunted by the aliens for being able to see. The aliens can communicate through wristwatches, which I think is kind of cool.
Little smartwatches.
Little smartwatches. Everyone who's got a smartwatch, you're being watched and monitored, but you just don't care.
We're being watched and monitored regardless.
We're being watched and monitored right now as we're recording this.
Absolutely.
Like they are taking notes on this on this episode. Like Bailey, listen, guys, I am within very good health. Just so everyone knows, Ty and I are very happy with our lives. So if we ever go missing, just know it's not by our own will.
Yep.
So the aliens would communicate through these smartwatches, which Nada and his gang were able to obtain, and they would actually be transported through a portal to the aliens' spaceport. Where
there's like some hollow earth kind of stuff too, a little bit. Like I assume that's what these are. Liminal spaces, that's another thing. If you look in liminal spaces or endless elevators.
Yeah.
That kind of falls in here with that. I mean, there's a few things you can correlate.
I just thought it was weird how they made the spaceport kind of look like an office building.
Yeah.
Like it just kind of looks like
a budgetary thing.
Yeah. Which I mean, I don't know what they look like. I don't know. They're probably like whatever you want them to look like to get you to do whatever you
been,
want.
Like, it could have been just a budgetary thing. Like, hey, let's just some office building.
It was probably like the office building where their production company was. Probably, like, let's borrow this ballroom right quick.
Yeah, because it was a pretty low budget movie.
They did awesome though. They did awesome.
Yeah, they did great on it. The great effects work.
They did really good making the aliens look super creepy too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But they found that the aliens and the human collaborators were actually celebrating the elimination of terrorists, quote unquote. So, and they would find this friend. That would take them through a tour of the spaceport, and they would locate the source of the signal that were keeping the humans asleep. Mm. Nada would unfortunately die fighting in order to get the source of the signal destroyed, as well as his partners. But they would get the job done, and the signal crashes, and all of the humans are able to see the aliens, including one unfortunate woman who was having a grandiose time. Very intimate time as well. And then she looks up and there's an alien on top of her. So that is a fright right there. Never know who you're dealing with, guys. Never know.
No, you never do. You never do. I watched, I remember like years ago on YouTube. This one, like YouTube was a little more lax than what you'd allowed on there. I remember watching this video. It was like a 15-minute long video. This guy had like a frame from a porno.
Oh!
But he didn't. It wasn't like showing like anything graphic. He was like super tight on this girl's face as she's in the middle of the act, and he's like going through like frame by frame, like claiming like you could see like her reptilian form like come through. And I remember him like talking like, you know, a lot of you know, this also comes in the porn experience, which, you know, I talked about a little bit, but not this aspect of it. You know, his claim was that these porn stars reptilians, and right at the moment of heightened ecstasy their human form will like blink.
What the fuck?
Like the reptilian form will like come through for like a split second. And I remember watching that. It was like a decade ago. Like,
oh my god,
YouTube was like the Wild West back before they like started before the Paul brothers got in here and ruined everything. But yeah, like I remember seeing that, and like it always stuck with me because I remember watching like 15 minutes and like even like myself, like, what the fuck am I watching this? Like thinking that as I was watching it. But he like is super zoomed in on her face, like analyzing everything. Like you can see, like it was bizarre. But I remember that. But that, yeah, there's stuff like that all the time.
It's nuts. There was one of a bodyguard. I think it was when Obama was running either first or second term. I don't recall which, but there was one of his bodyguard and supposedly his face shifting. It's a weird video because, like, here's the thing, he's going in and out of different lights as he's turning, which can distort the face a little bit.
Yeah,
either way, it's a creepy fucking video.
Oh, absolutely.
I just have my own skepticism about that. The creepiest one I did see was actually one of a man and his son giving an interview, I believe on CNN was the one that reported it, but I believe they actually took place on BBC. But this man and his son are talking, and when the son goes, and the son's only like 4 or 5 years old, when he goes to answer a question, he not only is like very stiff in like his posture, but his dad's mouth is moving in the same word forms as the son as he's speaking. And this is a live interview. Like, the father came out and said, like, my son and I, like, we didn't rehearse it. Like, you know, people have come out and said, like, well, maybe it was just nerves or something of that sort. But it really does kind of look like a ventriloquism act where the son is like the puppet. It's super fucking creepy.
Yeah.
It is. I've had to watch that quite a few times just to try to understand what is happening. And even the dad has come out and been like, no, we're not like extraterrestrial beings or anything.
That's
like
exactly
that.
Exactly what an extraterrestrial being would say.
Exactly. Like, ignore it. Like, don't. No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. So, did you go see Barbie?
No, I don't want to see that.
You don't want to see it?
I have no interest in Barbie.
Barbie.
I was kind of interested, like, when I was like, because it could have, I like the Lego movie a lot. I was like, maybe this is going to be like the Lego movie of Barbie. Like, that'd be kind of cool to see. You know, maybe like, make fun of it. But from what I hear, it's not that great.
I haven't seen it. I won't lie. I might not go see it just because, like,
I heard it's beautiful.
Oh,
I
my God.
I heard nothing but good things about, like, the set design and the costuming. People say it's beautiful. Like, they captured, like, the aesthetic perfectly. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that Tarantino was a part of it just told me that it was going to be absolutely visually pleasing. I love Quentin Tarantino. But the thing about Barbie, and we talked about it in the beginning of this episode when we talked about the neck and the female neck taking over and kind of putting the men into a position of lesser power, is their plot really resembles that.
Okay.
I'm not fucking lying. Here's the thing. The plot of Barbie is basically, like, to give you a 50,000 foot overview, Barbie has to go to the real world because the girl that is playing with her is mistreating her, and Barbie's feet go flat and she's starting to get cellulite. So Barbie has to go to the real world to convince the girl who is playing with her to treat her nicely. And Ken goes along with her. So Ken goes to the real world with her. And in Barbie land, it is already a matriarchal land. All of the Barbies are in power. All of the Barbies make the decision. And the producer and director of Barbie even came out and said that Kens in Barbie land are just accessories. So there's that. And then after which Barbie goes to the real world and Ken is introduced to the world of the patriarchy, and he is taught, you know, about monster trucks and shadow boxing and just like all of this like bullshit stuff that it's like real men don't act like that. Like, like they don't act like that. Like, no. But all of that to get to the point of when Barbie comes back to the Barbie land, she and the other Barbies have to trick all of the Kens in order to get all of the Barbies back in power. So we then have an all-female ruled empire, much like the neck did. So afterward, the little girl, who is still a part of the movie at this point, asks, what's going to happen to all of the Kens since all of the Barbies are back in power? Barbie then responds by going, well, we're not going to let the Kens have power until everything's equal in the real world. So we're going to take power away until power is restored in another world, which does not affect us. So
interesting.
All of that to be like, listen, the neck women kind of did the same thing where they took all of the power away from the men and then created a female run empire.
Matriarch.
Yes. Thank you. That was something I found interesting that is like in super recent times. Now, like I said, I have not seen Barbie yet, so I could not confirm. So I could not like confirm nor deny whether or not the intentions of that were true. But it was just kind of a funny little like parallel that I found, because the thing is the Alien World Order came out in 2017 and Barbie came out in 23. So pre-production of Barbie, probably writing for Barbie probably would have started in 2019. So
yeah, 2019, 2020. Yeah.
So it's kind of cool to see these little parallels, whether it's a story being retold in a different light, whether it's just a cool coinky dink parallel. There are all kinds, our entertainment, our corners of the world, our life in everyday aspects.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, this, like I said, the reptilian stuff just really spans the gambit of things. You can find little tidbits of its influence or influence of it in all sorts of different aspects of conspiracy things. I mean, all the way down to, you know, people talk about, you know, New World Order, who's controlling everything. That's aligns a lot with reptilian. Conspiracies, you know, disasters, 9/11, you know, natural disasters, weather control, all that shit. People kind of, you know, equate to some sort of omnipotent force controlling and pulling the strings. And that's usually pretty well aligns with what people believe to be the reptilians.
Yes, control.
Which is, it's kind of crazy. Reptilians are kind of like a taboo conspiracy nowadays, yeah. Especially because of, you know, the groups that have adopted it. So I mean, it's pretty, and even David Icke is kind of he's pretty out there with a lot of his claims, but. Yeah, reptilian conspiracy, it's a slippery slope, as with most conspiracies.
Oh, yeah.
You can start to kind of believe it. You know, if you put enough you put the pieces in the right way, most things will fit eventually. Whether or not that's the correct order in which to put them in or not, you know, that's up for you to decide. But, you know, a lot of very fringe groups
have
adopted the reptilians and placed them in different places in the world of who may be the actual reptilian. So, uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that to take into account when you're researching the reptilian rule. Yeah, it's with every conspiracy. You got to kind of dig deep and find out who you're getting your sources.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's one of those that, like, so there's an actual list that does exist that's out there of, like, people in power who you know, kind of fit the reptilian thing, description. To me,
most
it's
of them, I imagine most of them. I feel like it'd be like most.
Everyone's
like
on a
long ass list. Yeah, I feel like it'd be a long ass list.
If you have any sort of title that is in power of any single person, you are on that list. Just so you know, absolutely crazy. And it goes to show you like how insane this web can spin. Because like I said, like 20% of Americans believe in reptilians. Where that belief comes from, it's unbeknownst to me. Whether they're pulling it from biblical lore. I guess, well,
yeah, lore. It's lore.
Yeah, it's a lore. You know, cultural experience. There are people who have claimed to see reptilians. Andrea, I think her name's Andrea or Anna's Arizona Wilder. Is one that David Icke does an interview with who claims to have been a part of one of these reptilian communities and saw a lot of, you know, satanic worship as well as human sacrifice. Again, there's, you know, references all the way back through World War II. Like, I mean, it's crazy the way people are like, it's reptilians. It's reptilians.
Yeah. I said it's both conspiracies. Conspiracies, you know, can fit wherever you want them to.
Yes.
If you just position them the right way, you can find a place for everything. You know, anything bad happens, you can equate it to the New World Order.
Yep.
Or the reptilians.
Yep.
Or ultra-terrestrials or aliens.
Yep.
Bigfoot caused it.
Yep.
Anything. I mean, if you believe enough, conspiracies have a home anywhere you want them to be. So
that is true.
It's all about just navigating. Navigating your sources.
Yes.
Think things through logically.
Yeah. Like just apply a little bit of common sense.
Yes.
And then we will.
That's it too. It doesn't take a lot.
Nope. We will go from there. So that is what I have on a part one of the reptilians. I could easily do a part two of this with going into different wars, going into the royal family as well. I am a huge royal family history buff, so I would very much like that.
Yeah, you,
but
you do love the royal
I
family.
Do. They're
I
awesome.
never got it.
They're so grandiose and just so dramatic. Yeah. I love them. I love it. I absolutely love
there's
it.
There's a show on HBO Max I watched. I think it's called Royal Family or something. I think it's called The Family, maybe. It's a cartoon.
Yeah.
It's like 15-minute long episodes. I remember binging that the whole series when it dropped. And it's fun. It's like a Family Guy type thing.
Okay.
But it's the royal family.
Yes.
And they have like some conspiracy, like the reptilian stuff
yes.
in there. It's a pretty funny show.
Awesome.
Reptilians, there's another movie that not a lot of people have seen. There's a movie called Midnight Meat Train. It's got Vinnie Jones and Bradley Cooper, I think, in one of his like early roles. About this a reporter, it's played by Bradley Cooper, who is investigating all these like disappearances on this train at night, this like subway train. People just go missing on this train constantly, and he finds out that like the conductor is this like butcher.
Oh shit!
Who's you know, kidnapping, you know, lone passengers, and at the end, I'm gonna spoil it. Spoiler for anyone who has not seen Midnight Meat Train. I think it came out in 2009. At the end, you find out that the butcher is actually, you know,
capturing and killing these people and taking them to this like abandoned subway station that is home to these like reptilians.
Oh
my
god.
He's like feeding them because they're like weak.
Oh shit. Because
they've lost like all their power. So yeah. Like, they're like needing to be fed. It's a really weird, like an interesting turn. Cause like the rest of the whole movie is like a slasher movie.
Yeah.
And then at the end it takes this like wild twist.
Nice. Oh, I need to see that. That's like, yeah. Dust Till Dawn's like that too.
It's the guy that did, Clive Barker. It's a Clive Barker.
Oh, I like Mr. Barker. Hellraiser
and stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I like him. He's awesome. I really liked the, did he do the first Hellraisers?
Yeah, yeah, he did the first Hellraiser. Those. I think the first one, maybe the second one, or maybe just the first one.
I love those. Those are awesome. Those are like good, just wholesome, terrifying movies. Just
I wouldn't say wholesome.
Wholesome. wholesomely terrifying.
Yeah, I would not use that term at all.
No, it's not wholesome. Not wholesome,
Hellraiser.
Guys. Sometimes I use words that don't correlate with what I'm trying to say, but they just sound good with the thing. Everyone does it. Yeah. It's fine. I'm just going to admit to it.
But yeah, this is great, Bailey. This might be our longest episode ever.
I was not shooting for that, but I was kind of like, listen, this is a big one.
This was fantastic. Yeah.
I don't mean, and it just,
you really blew in on it.
Oh, thank you. I just, it's one of those ones that it literally touches every corner of the world, and we could do. I keep saying we could do a part two if you guys want. We could honestly keep doing it and make it a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like, it is insane. There's even sub segments that we could go into. There could be a whole episode on just Mr. David Icke himself. You know, there's London City as well, what he goes into with that. Wall Street. Like, it is insane the rabbit holes this thing goes down.
Yeah, it's a deep conspiracy rooted in a lot of different things, but I think that does it for us. So for Bailey's special birthday episode here, we did Reptilians, File 026. Next episode, we got File 027. Ooh. I'm going to be touching on something I love.
Yes.
The Simpsons. Talking about the Simpsons and the wild predictions and claims have been made toward them. And maybe they have some reptilians on the writing team there. You never know.
Maybe.
It's very possible.
That would explain a lot.
Yeah, would. We're going to be talking about that in the next episode, File 027. The Simpsons predicted it all. It's going to be a fun one. Make sure you guys follow us at Cult Talk Net across the board. That's Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. What's the other thing? Mike got us on. At Cult Talk Net. If you go any social media, more than likely there's a at Cult Talk Net account there. Cult-tober is in a month away. Less than a month.
Less than 1 month.
Cult-tober, and it's got coming. Some big surprises coming for you guys for Cult-tober. So keep your ears out, because we'll probably drop some information here on the next episode, File 027. We'll drop some inklings of what we have in store for Cult-tober, because it's going to be a big one. It's going to be massive. The biggest Cult-tober ever, and we're along for the ride. So,
yes.
Keep your ears glued here at Cult Talk Net, Cult Talk Conspiracy. Make sure you check out our other shows. Cult of Campbell comes back in the Cult-tober. That's every Monday, our Bruce Campbell horror movie podcast, Cult of Campbell. Cult of Lore comes out every first and third Thursday of the month. Make sure you guys check out youtube.com/culttalknet for a really cool full-length video episode they do. They work really hard on it, so make sure you check that out. It's pretty awesome. American Pie Slices, it's over. The summer is at an end. But if you're still craving that warm weather, warm sunny weather, go back and check out American Pie Slices on your podcast feeds. Mm-hmm. And maybe if we get enough support, you might American Pie Slices 2 might come next year. You never know.
It's my stomach hurt laughing so hard at that. Oh my god.
It was a fun one to do. American Pie Slices is Mike and I's show. We just break down American Pie 1999, and we also just throw in a bunch of personal slice of life stuff in there. So it's a good one. It's only 6 episodes. It's really, really quick listen, like hour and a half per episode.
Awesome.
It's quite a bit. But yeah, Cult-tober, we're getting ready for it. If you guys are new to Cult Talk Net, Cult-tober is our month-long celebration of our favorite holiday, Halloween.
Yes.
And we have so much shit planned for that month. So,
we really do.
But yeah, make sure you guys check us out. Keep following us at Cult Talk Net across the board for all the news and info and teases and all the stuff we're going to be dropping for Cult-tober. Make sure you guys follow us here at Cult Talk Net, Cult Talk Conspiracy, every other Tuesday. And also some special things will be dropping every now and then. But every other Tuesday, you'll find an episode of Cult Talk Conspiracy. But I think that does it, Bailey.
I think so. I think we've done it.
Everyone, make sure you wish Bailey a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
You can do that in our DMs or in our comment section. She'll really appreciate it. But I think that does it.
Yes. Thank you guys so much. This has been an awesome way to spend a birthday. Oh, thank you, Ty, for listening to my...
What a fun way to do it.
My reptilian rant.
It was terrific. It was fantastic.
Wonderful.
But there we go. I've been Ty.
I've been Bailey.
Until next time, question everything.